Hello, America, and to all of our listeners all over the world, you're listening to yet another exciting edition of Let's Weekend. I am your host with the most, Brandon Perkins. Joining me as always is Filippo D'Onofrio, Patrick Mifflin, and Chris Sologi. Say hi.
Hello.
Yo.
Yeah.
Hello.
So that Mueller thing definitely happened.
Yeah.
Honestly, it kind of went how I thought it was going to be, which was we probably weren't getting a whole lot of anything new. All it really did was confirm Well, we'll get to it.
Yeah.
but basically what I'm trying to say is some important stuff did happen, but it wasn't anything close to the kind of fireworks that people were expecting or kind of hoping for.
Yeah.
And you can kind of tell that Mueller himself is getting a little pissed off at this point.
He has never looked more tired or more old than he did during that hearing.
Yeah. Or more irritated.
Or emaciated, for that matter.
Hmm.
Yeah, I mean, there's got to be a point when he was like, look, motherfuckers, I'm supposed to be retired right now. I specifically came out of retirement just so I could do this. My job is done. Please let me go back to my grandkids.
Yep.
Yeah.
But anyway, so other than that, the UK now has a new prime minister. It is as we feared. We'll get to that as well. Let's see, what else? We got news. Puerto Rico basically damn near had a revolution. Well, technically, they've been having one for the last 2 weeks, but it finally came to a head this week. We got some more stuff from Netflix. And, of course, we got what we're going to be calling Trailer Palooza, because we got a shit ton of them from the San Diego Comic-Con this week.
Yep.
And, of course, Marvel was also there, and we got a bunch of what they've got coming soon. In the next couple years.
Both in terms of movies and comics.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, and yeah, that's pretty much it. We got some other stuff too, but we'll get to them when we can. But for right now, we need to start off as we always start off. So, Phil, what have you been up to this week?
So I went through Outland by Dennis E. Taylor. Turns out that's the first book of a series that he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
The premise being a bunch of university students figure out a quantum entanglement portal to, different, I guess you would call it alternate worlds, alternate Earths, basically.
Mm-hmm.
They happen to decide that, you know, Yellowstone just exploded. We should probably, get the fuck out of here. So they do. And they take about, 300 or so people with them.
Mm-hmm.
And they get, try to get updates from the other side. They try to scavenge and stuff and end up with some interesting adventures. Apparently, it takes about 6 days for the U.S. to completely collapse.
Wow, I'm surprised it took that long.
Yeah, it's like I sent a note to
There's some optimism
Taylor.
At work there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, I really love your optimism there, dude. Well, he is Canadian, so I mean, you know.
Yeah.
So there's that. And of course, as they're building up this whole settlement, they end up with a couple of unsavories, the type of people that kind of like to frequent the Daily Stormer and start
mm-hmm.
shit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, those guys. So it ends up being a very interesting book. I'm very interested to see where this series is going to go next, because this was basically, just mostly world establishment and stuff. So, I'm looking forward to seeing where he takes it, and hopefully he'll get back to the Bobverse at some point, so that'll
mm-hmm.
be nice too. And apart from that, I've just been playing Bloodstained. It's
as you do.
Yeah, it's still great. Boy, that PC version is really nice.
Mm-hmm.
Just point that out, especially now that mods have started coming out for it. So, very interesting and actually useful stuff. So, nothing like Naked Miriam or anything like that.
I'm sure that's out there.
Yeah, I'm sure somebody's going to do that at some point. But yeah, for that, for the most part, that's kind of been it for me. What about you, Pat?
Well, to the surprise of absolutely no one, I'm sure. I'm still doing Shadowbringers pretty much primarily. Making a ton of money just kind of exploiting the Materia market still.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely a different kind of racket after the expansion than it was before. But, if you adapt, you'll make it work.
Yeah.
And I've been adapting, so that's been good. I picked up House of X number one this week, and we'll be talking more about that later, but I don't know, there's something deeply unsettling about it as the starting point of a new status quo for the X-Men IP. But I'm sure that watching it all come undone will be a focal point of the story arc, so we'll see how that goes. Other than that, I just found out that the NHL 20 beta is underway, so I'll be getting in on that and hopefully have more to say about it on Monday or on Sunday. And on a related note, I am planning on bringing back my hockey streams to where I just kind of do a franchise mode from a management standpoint and wax philosophical with viewers about any and all hockey related matters. So that'll be fun to see the return to. And basically I'm going to be starting a brand new, 30-second franchise, not in Seattle, but I'll be starting it from the ground up and hopefully get a chance to explain my concepts of how a franchise should be built and the best way to be successful quickly. And just discussing that with viewers, it should be fun.
Yeah. Kind of looking forward to seeing where they take NHL 20, because, I mean, 19, as you expounded on last year, was a pretty damn big game.
Yeah, and they're keeping everything from what it looks like, and it looks like, from what I've seen in trailers, that this is going to be more of a physics-based improvement, but there's definitely room for improvement there. There always is with these sports simulations, but I think we're in for another real treat.
All right.
That's been my week.
All right, Chris, what about you? Also, Pat, you need to put your stuff into the
yeah,
notes.
I'm not actually sitting at my computer right now, but I will.
All right, we'll do that later. Okay. Chris, what about you?
Yeah, weather-wise, it's been actually nice this week for the most part. I was in the 70s from like Monday to Thursday, which was quite nice, though Monday was a big rainstorm that I happened to be out in most of it, so that was not fun. But yeah, it was nice to be outside, not be like instantly soaked in sweat and hoping to die from 90-degree heat. But yeah, for the most part, weather's been fine. I think we got rain coming up over the next week or so. It's going to be fun. But yeah, I decided to watch one of Netflix's movies on Netflix, and I picked The Silence, which is based on a book from 2015, I think it was.
Yeah.
And it sounds very similar if you've heard of other movies like this. So it's a family that has their daughter, played by Kiernan Shipka, who is in one of the other Netflix shows, Sabrina. She plays a teenage girl who has like recently gone deaf in like the last couple of years. And she and her family are kind of in the middle of this whole thing that happens with these creatures called the Vespa, I think, or Vesca, where they are these like weird bat-like creatures that will attack anything that makes noise or anybody that's making noise. And so they try to get out of the city and find some place where they can live like in peace, I guess, in quiet. Hoping to not make any noise. And they eventually get to a point where they sort of have to go back into town, which is deserted, except for this weird cult.
There's always got to be one.
Yep.
Yeah. And it's a cult called The Hushed, which you eventually see that they have all their people cut their tongues out.
Nice.
Yeah. It's like, you guys could just be quiet. You don't have to go that far.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, they
take a mile of silence. It's what a lot of monks do.
Yeah, they want the girl, as they creepily, like the main guy, that runs it has like a notebook he writes in to communicate with people. And he writes in it like the girl is fertile. Sort of thing in a very creepy way. And like the movie just ends like there's a confrontation between them and the family at the house, and then the family wins and then it's over. And then there's like a weird little bit at the end where it's like, oh, they have bows now, bows and arrows, to take out these bat-like creatures, I guess. I think the most ludicrous thing I saw is, so this was filmed in 2017. The son in the family was a little bit younger than Karen Shipka's character, is like described as like a technophile. And they show him playing the Kinect sports game on Xbox One, which seems like a very ludicrous thing for a kid of that age to be playing in 2017. As like, hey, I like tech.
Yeah.
Instead of like, I don't know, VR.
Maybe he just likes obsolete tech.
I guess. He's playing the game with the jet skis in there. Hmm. I was like, well, it's a good thing they're abandoning the house because that thing's not useful anymore. And the weird thing is, like, despite there being like this overall like destruction of society in large parts of the country, like the girl is able to use her iPad to look up stuff on the internet, like social media stuff that other people are posting. That's where they learn, like, oh, if you go to the cold up to the north, the creatures can't survive there. That sort of stuff. And she's like communicating with her boyfriend. That sort of stuff. Even though they have some rule like no phones, no texting. It's like you just turn off the notification noises. Like it doesn't. Like phones should be the easiest way you do anything because you don't have to type anything. It's all just touching. As long as you're not stupid to fight to drop it or anything. Which there's an amusing part with the cult like invading the houses. They send this girl over, and you know how there are suicide bombers with like bombs strapped to them?
Yeah.
She has phones strapped to her with like alarms set to go off in the clock app. It's like, it's genius, but also such a ridiculous thing to see. And like when they deal with the phones, like they're just throwing phones in the house with the alarms about to go off. It's like some of the most ridiculous stuff I've seen in a while. But it's kind of fun. As like a, you know, quick, like it was like an hour and a half thing I can do, not think for a bit. So it was all right movie. But yeah, that was definitely a thing. I was looking at, up the Wikipedia page to learn more about it. And they, so there's definitely an issue raised about having a deaf character not played by a deaf actress sort of thing. And then they, I think whoever the director was like defending it like, oh, she learned her sign language is like nearly flawless with this. Like, I doubt it. Cause she's able to like read mouths and sign. So she's not that handicapped, but also the way she acts is very much like she's not actually deaf. You can definitely tell that. It's just the way she's acting. She's not like speaking differently than you would think if you didn't have hearing anymore, that sort of stuff. But for the most part, it's okay. But yeah, that was just a weird corner of Netflix I dove into, which I saw one comment describing it as, this is a movie that Netflix picked up so that they could have something to recommend you if you like Bird Box. Sort of thing, like a very cynical way of looking at it. But yeah, that was all right.
I mean, they're not wrong.
Yeah. But it's just weird, like, directly, like, having it for that reason versus, like, they just sign a ton of movies. They get, as well as a lot of shows and all that, more than I could ever watch, but. Yeah, I've been doing a lot of streaming this week. Did some Kerbal Space Program on Sunday and actually got to the moon. Yeah, landing on there, but by landing I mean crash landing. Because I was not as good at that to figure out how to land. But I managed to crash land, which is good enough. I didn't promise everybody to get there safely.
Nice.
But yeah, Jordan was in the chat, helped me out a little bit with that stuff. And yeah, I got a good save, like heading towards the moon. But I only have like 20% of the tank left for fuel. So it's like, all right, I can't do all that much to actually get a safe landing here. But we got a lot closer over the course of the stream. Initially, had trouble getting into a good orbit that was sort of parallel to the moon's orbit. So it'd be like off-center, so it would make it really hard to find a point where I could set up maneuvers that would actually get me in the right way for the moon, sort of thing. Just the way they had all that set up. But otherwise, yeah, that's a pretty good version of that game once you get the controls down and start actually doing tutorials and learning how to play it. Yeah, I definitely think there could be a little bit more improvement in just what you can do without having to constantly swap between essentially like the radial menu and the cursor menu sort of stuff. But otherwise, that game works out pretty well. And let's see, Tuesday I streamed some Darkest Dungeon because that is on sale on PSN. They put up their big summer sale.
Yes, they did.
Yeah, Darkest Dungeon was one I was like, I haven't played this in a while. And I own all the DLC, which is cool. When you start up a new campaign, you can just turn on everything or turn it off, you know, play with just the additions that you want in there, which is pretty cool. So you can have like, oh, I just want all the new units in here. Not the new like mission types or whatever, campaign stuff in there. And yeah, that game gets quite fucked. I was playing on the second difficulty they give you. There's three difficulties, so I might just start playing on the easiest one. But one of the best things, I pulled in my cross-buy save from playing on the Vita like 2.5 years ago, something like that, with the save name Darkest Duncan. As in, like, Dunkin' Donuts.
Yeah, of course.
So I was like, all right, that's a good name. So I think I created a new save and just gave it Darkest Dunkin' Jr. And, yeah, I had some good runs. There was, like, this, one of the quests I did where it's like, oh, you just have to get 90% through this dungeon. And I did that, and I was like, all right, let's try one more room. And that's where all the shit went bad. Luckily managed to survive, but tons of my people were really stressed out, getting bad traits to them. And some of the traits aren't necessarily bad when you read the title. Like one is like satanophobia. It's like, oh, that's not bad. But it is negative because you do like 20% or like 10% less damage to unholy enemies, sort of thing. And yeah, that game very much want to kind of screw you over and over again. And I did try one of the newer like campaign DLCs they added in there, which gives you this farm that you're trying to farm these crystals out of where these aliens have landed, essentially. And it's kind of a wave-based mode a little bit. You're trying to essentially reach a certain point in killing enemies to get this these crystal currency out of it, which you can go back and sell it for some good items. But yeah, that game's a lot of fun if you're willing to put up with the depressing kind of art style and atmosphere it has. And yesterday, wait, no, I did another one. But yesterday I did a Switch puzzle party stream where I played some puzzle games that were on sale. The first one was Mom Hid My Game, which is a Japanese mobile puzzle game. It's a series in Japan, but not, we only got the first game here in North America on the Switch. But it's a game where essentially your mom has gotten annoyed with you playing your like fake DS, and so she's hidden it in every level. And so you got to sort of click around and figure out where she hid it. But at times there's like, oh, She's standing behind this lamp. You click on the lamp. It's like, ah, she caught you trying to find it. Game over.
Even though it's very obvious that she's standing behind it.
Yeah, you oftentimes just do it because it's like, all right, what's she doing here? That sort of stuff. And the other character you have in there is the grandpa. Like one of the early ones, you get a pitcher of water and you just keep giving him water to drink. Then he has to go to the bathroom, runs away, and under his pillow he's sitting on is your game.
Yeah.
Sort of thing. And like there's others where you have to... They're like, for whatever reason, there are like people on bikes just crossing right in front of this this dresser that has your game in it. And so you have to try and figure out how to get over there, which you end up doing by pulling this poster off the wall and getting the thumbtack, putting it down. Then they all run over it and their tires get punctured.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're not careful and you go try and go get to the cabinet, you're just going to step on it too.
Mm-hmm.
It's game over. So you got to pick it back up before you go in. It's like a lot of silly stuff, silly fun stuff that is really quite good. And it's $3. I guess about 50 levels. Take a few hours to get through it, but it's a fun time. And people should definitely buy that so we can get 2 and 3 over here.
Mm.
And keep the... Because I think in the other ones, like finding the mom becomes an actual collectible part of it. So you have to... That makes that more of a necessary part of the game. The second one is Baba Zoo, which is a puzzle game that is really quite good. We essentially have these phrases around the level. Oftentimes, some of them are put in places where you can actually affect them. But it'll say, like, Baba is you, which means the character Baba is the one you're controlling. But if, in some cases, you might be able to change it. So, like, you know, the flag is Baba. So you start, or you do, like, flag is Baba. That means all the flags turn into Baba characters. If Baba is you, you start controlling all of them. But there'll be points where, like, you know, flag is win. But sometimes they'll have, like, flag is win, but flag is defeat. So if you go and try and hit it, you'll die instead of winning. But you have to figure out ways to manipulate these different terms. And they add some new wrinkles, like instead of having them go, you know, horizontal or vertical with these terms, you can also do, like, a plus formation, just using one is between them. They also introduce, like, and as a way to extend things. As well as some other ways that you can just manipulate these phrases into solving these puzzles in different and interesting ways. And it's a really well-made game. And it's on sale for like $10.49, I think, on the Switch. But I think that ends tomorrow. And the third one, I played Picross, Lord of the Nazarick, which is a new Picross game based on an anime called Overlord. That I never heard
of. Oh, you definitely need to watch it.
Yeah, it's really weird because I think this is the only game that's come over here. They have like mobile games, and I guess there's technically like a web game in there, so I could play that, but it's probably in Japanese, I assume. But it's like, this is really weird interacting with this anime only from the perspective of solving Picross puzzles. Because it presents a lot of story up front. With this guy that I just call AOG, because his name is hard to figure out without it, hearing it said. Looks like his middle name is like O-O-A-L. It's a O-O-A-L. I was like, all right, I'll just call him AOG because it's a lot easier. But yeah, like you pick the different characters for the campaign, and you get some cutscenes out of them. And... but along the way, you're doing these puzzles, trying to max out what they have.
Mm-hmm.
And each of the puzzles gets you like this little like shot from the anime. It's like, oh, this item, like the, you're the main guy, AOG, and you got like his ring that he has. And this other weird stuff that are for the puzzles. But also has color Picross in there, puzzles for that. And I think there's also Mega Picross if you want to do that, and some of that stuff. And yeah, it's real weird to come at it from this way, which is not the first anime one that they have made.
Hmm.
There's another one that they made. I'm going to have to look it up real quick. But the titles don't really explain it at all. Because, like, you would never guess, like, Picross, Lord of the Nazarick. That's tied to Overlord. I had to, like, look up the character's name because I was like, that's probably the easiest way to figure out what the hell anime this is from. Let's see. It's called Kimono Friends Picross from the same developers. But it's very anime as hell in design. I don't know what Kimono Friends is, though. But yeah, it was like me looking at the stream, like trying to figure out what the hell is this? This has to be real anime. They didn't just make up this weird anime universe just for this game sort of thing. But now I eventually figured that out. It was Overlord. I guess it's over here on Crunchyroll. Here, I'll put a link to the Kimono Friends Switch game in case you guys might know. Okay, this just seems to be an anime called Kimono Friends.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, Mine Shoji Zaki. Okay, it's on Crunchyroll. Okay. It's another, like, weird chibi girl show.
Yep.
With various animal girls as well. So, sure, that's a thing. There's also there's a weird Sanrio Picross game on the 3DS. I think it's just got a bunch of different of the Sanrio characters in it. Yeah, Sanrio characters Picross. Yeah. All that sort of weird stuff. I guess the Picross games must be doing well enough where they're just partnering with different anime companies to do this stuff. But yeah, that was pretty neat. I was trying to figure out what the other game I did this week. I'm not sure what I did. I don't know what I did. I don't know what the other game was. But yeah, it was Rocket League. That's right. I played some more Rocket League because the final phase for the Radical Summer event is on, which has a fun little special game mode, which is volleyball. So essentially, they turn on the mutators for the ball, so it's very light, but it also has the curveball. So as you hit it, you can give it some English, which makes it really fucking weird to play when you've played 1,000 matches with a specific set of physics. So it's like all your instincts are wrong trying to play that. But it's fun. But it just has 2-on-2 with that. And they got new items, some that are Voltron related, some that are WWE related. And a couple others in there that are just generic 80s TV stuff. But yeah, you got a little boost for your car that is got the like lasers of the Voltron forming. You also can just have the big Voltron final form on your top of your car. As well as, I think, a cool design for the decals for your skin. But yeah, that they also changed how the end of this Rocket Pass is going to happen. They basically delayed it about a month. So like August 27th is when they're going to be essentially putting up the new Rocket Pass, which will have the ability for you to actually work on challenges after that week.
Yeah.
This week it was all, you have 1 week to do it. If you don't do it, tough luck.
Yeah.
But now you'll be able to keep working on them afterwards in case you, you know, were out of town for vacation or whatever. Don't play for whatever reason. So they're doing that as well as they're starting to do some update stuff. The new competitive season starts then. And yeah, they're kind of lining up a bunch of this content at the same time, which makes a lot of sense instead of just having it like end at different times throughout the year to maybe make it a little bit confusing at times. But yeah, that's been a good week of streaming. Got some stuff lined up for this weekend. Probably going to play some Madden 20. Now that that's up on EA Access, the trial is. Going to play some of that and probably play some Doom since that's not on consoles now. I picked up the PS4 version for $5. And I'll probably play some of that.
That's a good way to spend $5.
Yeah. Yeah, I've never played it before. I don't think I've owned any version of it, as far as I know. But yeah, that's kind of what's going on there. Mm-hmm. I also put up a new Mario Maker level. I just did the remake of the Door Bashers level in Super Mario 3D World, which just went up a little bit earlier. Finally got that figured out. But otherwise, I'm going to figure out what I'm going to do next. Watch some more MXC. Figure out what other games I can remake in Mario Maker.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think they just upgraded the amount of levels you can make or upload to 64 now. So it was 32 before. But that's been shit. How about you, Brandon?
First and foremost, I beat the Whatness, which I didn't think was actually possible, but I did. And I even got a hint to show me where the actual ending for the game is, and I got it. And it basically reveals like what the island is supposed to be. Which, to be honest, I kind of suspected it was the case all along, but basically what the ending reveals is, you know what, the game's like, 5 years old now?
Yeah, any statute of limitations.
Basically the island is a virtual reality simulation. It's like a something that was created by these groups of programmers that were trying to create sort of like a something akin to what on TV Tropes they call a Lotus Eater machine.
Yep.
And basically what happens is, just for those who are curious, how do you get the actual ending? First, you want to go ahead and, you know, complete the main game, you know, as you usually do. You know, getting all of the 11 lasers pointed at the mountain, then you go up to the summit of the mountain, then you go down into the mountain. And that's when you start to see, like, all the plate where you start to get the ideas, like, you know, this place was constructed methodically by people. You start seeing, like, old, like, panels for puzzles and like pieces of the environment sort of here and there. And then you finish that. And what happens is after you finish the final puzzle in that point, you get into a, basically you get into the elevator from the end of Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. and basically what that does is,
seems legit.
And it sort of takes you through a sort of flyby. Flyby through like all the pieces of the different parts of the island while the narrators read like pieces of the Lotus Sutra. And then it starts you right back at the beginning. And then you're like, okay, so what now? Well, do you remember when you first are in the beginning area, right? And you know, one of the first puzzles, one of the first puzzles where you have to like do a couple of puzzles in order to get one main puzzle so you can go off into the island proper. It's that force field. It looks like an electric fence looking kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, first what you got to do is after you've gotten you're sent back to the beginning like this, you go out back into the regular world like you were doing. And then you go out to the beginner's area and you'll notice if you look closely at the sort of like stone pillars, the stone columns that are there, one of them looks kind of like you could actually do a puzzle on it. And it turns out it actually is a puzzle. It's one of the grid. It's like one of the column puzzles that you run into towards the end of the segment inside of the mountain. Mm-hmm. And then you do that and you solve it. And then what happens is that opens a second puzzle, which is on the floor area from the it's outside, but it's the area you enter into after you're X-ing the little tube thing that you came out of. And if you solve that puzzle, then you go over to the force field. And you'll notice with the force field that the force field itself, you know, it's the regular force field that's like blocks it off. That's like a door. But next to it, there's like this long, tall, like thing of energy that's like going up into the sky. And so all you got to do is you got to line that up with the sun so that the sun is like at the top and connected to the line of energy. And then you enact that like it's a puzzle and you go up, down, and across and around, and it opens up into the secret area where they basically constructed all of it, and it gives you like the audio for the who did what, and you finish that, and then you find out at the very end that the person you've been playing is one of the dudes who started the who constructed the whole thing, and he takes off like a sheet over his head because he's basically been unconscious the whole time. And he has trouble dealing with the fact that he can't really do, like, puzzles in real life like he does with the game. Because, like he goes across the restrooms in the office, and he tries to, like, poke the little circles and draw lines with them.
Doesn't work.
Yeah. Apparently there's also, like, a super secret ending where if you get 110% done... it wakes up with him, but this time it turns out that he's like linked to like a catheter, and there's like an enormous water bottle with his piss in it. So for some reason he picks this up and he carries it and he tries to go downstairs and he falls down the stairs and he basically pours the piss all over himself.
Nice.
Yeah.
That does sound like something John Blow would do.
I'm actually pretty sure it's John Blow who's using the camera for this. in fact, I know it's Jonathan Blow because you can at least you can see his reflection once or twice. But but yeah, so other than that, since I finished that, of course, I went out to GameStop today and I got my copy of Fire Emblem Three Houses. Yep. And honestly, I haven't gotten that far in it. I've only gotten to the part where I just got to the monastery. But, yeah, so basically overall, the plot of this particular Fire Emblem is there's this continent with these three different kingdoms that are divided with each other. And see if I can remember what the individual kingdoms are. There's the Adrestian Empire, the Holy Kingdom of Fargus, and the Leicester Alliance. You want to say Leicester Alliance because of the way it's spelled, but it's pronounced Leicester Alliance. And basically right in dead center of all of them is this monastery, which is hosted by the Church of Seiros, which is like the major religion of these parts. And in this monastery, it's essentially a school that uses the trained knights. And each of the kingdoms are represented by three different houses. So like the Adrestian Empire is represented by the Black Eagles. The Holy Kingdom of Fargus is represented by the Blue Lions. And the Leicester Alliance is represented by the Golden Deer. And I'm guessing one of them is also Slytherin, and it's the Secret House and Harry Potter jokes. So what happens then is then you then have to choose which house you're going to end up representing. But technically you're a teacher, so you're teaching all of these people, basically. Yeah. And if you remember with like Persona, especially like Persona 5 or Persona 4, where you had to sort of, you know, manage your time and amount of what you're going to do, like on a calendar.
Yeah, you can apply that to 3 as well.
Yeah. Yeah, you do basically like that as well. You go, you know, you talk to your various students, you teach them and give lectures on, you know, to help bring up experience points. You'll also do stuff like what's called tea time, which is where you actually get to have one-on-one conversations with your students, build up relationships, try to get, you know, these students to get to sort of, you know, befriend these other students, because much as has been the case with Fire Emblem games for the last few installments, the right students befriending the other right student means that they can actually, you know, buffer each other. and, you know, make
that's
them
not where I thought you were going with this, but
no, the childbirth thing from Fates and Awakening is not a thing here. No. But, you know, it's, you know, come on, you guys have played like Fire Emblem Fates, right?
Yeah.
Okay, you remember how there's like students that complement each other on the battlefield so that they can actually double up and like, yeah, that's the other thing.
Right, you'll try atrocious damage.
Yeah. And then every so often they actually go out onto the battlefield because, you know, you can train all you want in school, but eventually you got to go out and get real world experience if you're going to be a knight. And so you go out and you like fight bandits and stuff like that. And then after you do all of that, well, I'm guessing at some point midway through the point, there's a time skip and then everybody's trying to kill each other. And that's basically Fire Emblem Three Houses.
I'm thinking the shit hitting the fan precedes the time skip, but
there's also some other plot. Like, for whatever reason, there's this weird little green-haired loli chick named Sothis who, for whatever reason, has started haunting your dreams and seems to think that you're somehow related to some kind of prophecy or something that's coming involving the church.
Which, of course, means that you are.
Yeah. And, yeah, that's pretty much it. There's, of course, an evil faction called Those Who Slither in the Dark. There's also these road faction.
I see what they did there.
Behind this guy called the Flame Emperor. There's a bunch of non-playable characters, including the previously mentioned Sothis, who is basically walking loli bait. I mean, that's what she was designed.
You just have to call it what it is.
Yeah. And yeah, that's pretty much Fire Emblem Three Houses. They've added like some new stuff here this time. Like, they've added what they call the brigade feature, where you can actually have your characters like hire on additional soldiers for your particular like little platoon to help fight and attack with you. So as you can imagine, there is like full on like armies on the battlefield this time around.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, that came across in the first full trailer.
Yeah. And, yeah, that's pretty much Fire Emblem Three Houses. That's gaming as far as it's been. Obviously, I've been doing my normal reading as usual. Nothing really to add to that. And, of course, oh, yeah. You guys remember how we were telling you about how I was, me and my dad were rebuilding a coconut's cage,
right,
living space. After the door, you know, the glass went and shattered.
Mm-hmm.
We finished it. Yeah. And he's in there right now.
Cool.
Yeah. And I had to, you know, do some yard work this week. I had to go out and do some, had to bring out the street cutter to do some weed eating. And I really hate that. I mean, it's bad enough. You know, it's like upper 80s, you know, it's humid, it's July. Also, the fact that we live on an incline doesn't make it that much easier. Mm-hmm. That's pretty much everything I did this week. So, anybody got anything else to add before we move on?
No, I think I'm good.
All right. Well, then, it's now time for everybody's favorite part of the show, Brandon's Random Factoid. And this week... so we've used the phrase up to this point. I believe we're all familiar with it. The phrase stochastic terrorism, right?
Yes.
All right. So do you guys know like what the definition of stochastic terrorism is? Like what it actually means?
It's speech that basically inspires others to carry out terroristic acts.
Yeah. And it's not just like a general, it doesn't necessarily count as like a general call to rise up or anything. No, it's specifically like, it's the kind of thing where you both like put out information that shouldn't be public, specifically tell them people what should be done, and then they go out and do it.
Yeah.
Everyone from like Anwar al-Awlaki, you know, one of the guys who was the head of Al-Qaeda, has been called a stochastic terrorist. I've known at least one person say Alex Jones was, but then again, that would mean you'd have to take him seriously.
Shockingly, a lot of people do.
Yes. But the thing is here in the United States especially, the idea that, you know, speech itself can be a form of action is something that's kind of alien to us. To a certain degree. Like, the famous, you know, axiom has always been that you can't, you know, that it ends when, like, you know, your freedom ends where my fist is and where your nose begins, yeah. That kind of thing. Or saying, like, you know, you cannot shout fire in a crowded theater when there's no fire.
Which you can't.
Yeah. But there is, in fact, legal precedent for people actually not only committing stochastic terrorism, but actually being found guilty and executed for it. And in this case, I'm talking about probably the most infamous of all of the stochastic terrorists, a man who he never pulled a trigger or pushed a button or, you know, a switch or anything like that. But he was still directly involved with, well, not directly involved with, but helped to inspire and facilitate what is considered to be the greatest crime of the 20th century. The gentleman I'm talking about is this gentleman, Julius Streicher. Julius Streicher was a prominent member of the Nazi Party. He became a member right around the time, actually, he had been with a couple of different parties of its kind before Hitler was brought into the Nazi Party fold. He'd been, you know, after World War I had ended, he went around in groups like the Thule Society, the German National Protection and Defense Federation, the German National Party, the German Socialist Party, which was, you know, one of those parties that, you know, was, let's be honest, they put that part in the name because it sounded good, much like the actual Nazi Party did.
Yep.
And the reason he is infamous and the reason why he is considered to be not only one of the most prominent members of the Nazi Party, but also one of the most prominent architects of what we call the Holocaust, is that for about 25 years from the mid-1920s until, you know, his death, his execution in 1946, he founded a publishing house, which was, let me see if I can remember what it was actually called. Okay, I can't find it here. But basically, he started a publishing house, and we'll just call it Streicher Publishing, in which he put out and became a multimillionaire, by the way. He actually made a lot of money doing this with his publishing house. He began putting out a tabloid-style newspaper called Der Stürmer. You guys ever heard of the Daily Stormer?
Yeah.
This is where they got their name from.
Hmm.
Der Stürmer was a weekly tabloid that exploded in popularity in the late 1920s. It was a weekly, about, I guess you want to say, like, 8-page, which, so yeah, about, like, it was like 8 pages, and it was basically filled with exactly what you would expect something like this would be filled with. It was an infamously, virulently anti-Semitic newspaper. That was infamous for the fact that it basically ran itself very much like an actual tabloid, which meant that whether or not anything that he put into it had any grain of truth was incidental. Much like the supermarket tabloids that you get at the grocery store or, you know, anything involving TMZ. It became particularly infamous, and I'm just going to go ahead and put this a sample for like a cover page of one of this publication, I guess we can call it. As you can see, the other thing that it was infamous for was the rather hideous anti-Semitic caricatures that it would print on its pages.
Shocking.
The one that I just put in the show notes and the link there is one where they did a special issue specifically around the concept of blood libel. You guys know what blood libel is?
No.
I've heard
the term.
Yeah, it was an old belief that originated in the Middle Ages that the Jews would secretly go out into the night, kidnap Christian children, and then drain them of blood to use for their religious rites.
Man, they were some high motherfuckers.
Oh, it was the Middle Ages. It's not like there was a whole lot to do.
It's true.
That is like the most infamous publication he put out, but it wasn't the only one. On top of this publication, his publishing house also put out a series of children's picture books, one of which was the infamous Der Giftlitz, also known as the Toadstool. And you know what? I'm just going to go ahead and put another link in here and just let you look at the cover of it. It's like, yeah, you can kind of guess what the message of this book is supposed to be.
Trying to get them young.
Yeah, that was his whole point. In fact, Der Stürmer specifically was written in a very vulgar and sort of easy to understand style that specifically made it popular with teenagers. And he had a lot of different ways of getting this publication out there. Because on top of, you know, people going out to newsstands and buying it or getting a subscription, during the reigning years of the Hitler's rule, they also put up thing called Stürmer boxes, which were basically these. Well, I'll put you one right here. It's these little sort of, you know, kind of glass enclosed, boxes, for lack of a better term, or, you know, billboards where he would put up the pages for that week's issue, so that, you know, if a person couldn't afford to buy one, they could just go to, you know, the closest Stürmer box and they could read it there. And you'll note in that picture some of the ages of the people reading that.
Yeah.
They look relatively young, don't they?
Yeah.
So here's the funny thing about this guy. He was probably, even though he was just a very just awful, unlikable human being. He was probably the only member of the like upper echelon of the Nazi Party who wasn't a complete failure at life. Because, you know, the sort of the joke about Hitler was always that he was a failed artist. Right? But he wasn't like the only failure in the party. Goebbels was a failed writer, Goering was a failed fighter ace, Himmler was a failed soldier. Julius Streicher, however, was a very successful entrepreneur and publisher, and writer for that fact, because he tended to write most of the material you would read in Der Stürmer. It probably wouldn't surprise you that most of the upper echelons hated his guts. they hated him, and they especially hated his paper. Goering really hated it. Goebbels actually tried to get it banned at one time. The only reason it managed to stick around was, well, for one thing, Hitler liked it. He read every issue. He was a devoted fan. And Himmler thought it had, you know, good propaganda use. Because, you know, he even brought up the reason. Get them while they're young. That's why they supported it. Now, it's also important to remember that although Der Stürmer is considered a part of Nazi propaganda, and it clearly was, it actually wasn't an official organ of the Nazi Party. It was actually, because again, it was Streicher's publishing house, so it was in public ownership. The Nazis actually did have their own newspaper, which was called, they had their own newspaper, and Goebbels actually had a rival publication that was meant to supposedly be a bit more intellectual, and it would occasionally publish, you know, pieces of extracts from A German Life, which was Goebbels' garbage early 1920s novel. You know, he, other than that, Streicher did have like a government opposed for a short time, but he was eventually like chased out for corruption or whatever. But he remained a loyal party member to the very end. And of course, obviously the Nazis lost the war. And then of course there was Nuremberg, you know, Nuremberg trials. And there were about, I think it was like about 21 major members of the Nazi establishment who were actually charged for crimes in Nuremberg. And Stryker was one of them. He was charged with both crimes against peace and crimes against humanity. Now, he was acquitted on the crimes against peace charge, but he was found guilty of crimes against humanity, and he was sentenced to death on the 1st of October, 1946. The actual judgment that was written against him, there's a section, and it goes like this. For his 25 years of speaking, writing, and preaching hatred of the Jews, Stryker was widely known as Jew Baiter Number One. In his speeches and articles, week after week, month after month, he infected the German mind with the virus of antisemitism and incited the German people to active persecution. Stryker's incitement to murder and extermination at the time when Jews in the East were being killed under the most horrible conditions clearly constitutes persecution on political and racial grounds in connection with war crimes as defined by the Charter and constitutes a crime against humanity. So he was actually executed on the 16th of October of that year, along with 9 other condemned. Now, a lot of the other Nazis actually went to death fairly gracefully. You know, the ones that actually didn't, you know, kill themselves like pussies like Hitler and Goering did. Mm. And Goebbels, for that matter, who actually killed his family before he killed himself. Stryker, he was hanged at Nuremberg prison. Of all the hangings that happened, he was probably the most melodramatic. When he got to the bottom of the scaffold, he screamed Heil Hitler. When he mounted the platform, he delivered his last sneering reference to Jewish scripture, snapping, Purim Fest! You guys know what Purim is?
No.
Well, it's the... Purim is like the celebration of the time when, God, it's from the Book of Esther. She's like a Jewish woman who gets brought into King Xerxes' harem, and there's Lord Haman who tries to get her, who hates Jews, and then it's a complicated story, but ultimately it's the Jews triumphing over their oppressors. When they put the HUD over his head before he was hanged, the last thing he said was, the Bolsheviks will hang you one day. And then they hung him. Like a bitch. Funny thing is, though, his hanging actually didn't go as planned. Because you know how these types of gallows in the modern era are supposed to work. You get up high, there's a trapdoor under, and then you drop, and your neck's supposed to go crack.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, apparently he went down kicking.
I have a pretty good idea where this is going.
Yeah, which meant he kind of hung there for a little while. Yeah. So, basically the lesson with Julius Stryker is that speech is not a thing that is either limitless or powerless inherently, especially when you associate it with the things that are going on currently.
Yeah.
It's important to remember, as the Nazi war machine was going on clear through the last couple of years when the Holocaust itself was fully enacted, this guy was right there and he, every day, every week, every month, basically putting out the most horrid racist garbage, trying to get people to actively go out and kill people. Mm-hmm. And he was very fast and loose with putting out people's personal information as There have been reports of that era when he would list someone as like an enemy of Germany and they would go out and basically get lynched. So before anyone says anything, no, I don't think Julius Stryker, I don't think someplace like, say, Fox News or something rises to the level of Der Stürmer or Julius Stryker. Stryker's publications were a particular dose of odiousness that I don't think even Rupert Murdoch would be okay with. it is a lesson on, well, let's be honest here. When you hear talks about free speech these days, who is it that's usually talking about it?
Usually it's the far right.
Yeah. Hmm. Now you know why. And that has been another edition of Brandon's Random Factoid. All right. Now then, with that out of the way, it is now time to start, as we always do, with the show proper. And the first part, of course, is our Asshole of the Week. And our Asshole of the Week is none other than the new Prime Minister of the United Kingdom, Mr. Boris Johnson.
Yeah, who's just an all-around terrible person.
It's like, he's a walking, thick-jawed oaf.
What if Bam Bam grew up to be a Nazi?
So, obviously, Theresa May stepped down as Prime Minister. She actually announced her stepping down, I think it was a couple months ago. And this was the last day she officially stepped down. And Boris Johnson, which, let's be honest, a lot of people thought he was probably going to be her successor.
Yeah.
Well,
there we go.
They were right.
You got Trump in the UK, in the US, and Johnson in the UK. Starting to look like we're kind of fucked.
Yeah. This guy is not only a hard Brexiter, but he's also the kind of person who just says go at it and damn the consequences. Go ahead.
I was gonna say, like, he is like cut out most of the administration that Theresa May had, installed his own people, then is basically talking about there being a real chance of having a no deal Brexit. Which with places like Northern Ireland, it's going to be a huge shit show.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes, because, you see, here's the thing. Remember, part of the reason why everything's been kind of okay in Northern Ireland for the last 15 years or so is because, you know, everything's basically wound down there. Obviously, like, the kind of, you know, Catholic and Protestant sectarian conflict is still there, but you haven't seen anything close to what it was in the 70s and 80s.
Yeah.
You know, it's, you know, there isn't paramilitaries actively patrolling the streets. Hmm. But if there is a hard Brexit, and keep in mind, part of that reason is because New England, Northern Ireland with the United Kingdom has been able to sort of, you know, enjoy the benefits of being in the EU due to its somewhat unique position. But if there is a hard Brexit, then that basically means that the checkpoints are going to start going up again.
Yep.
And the last time they started putting up checkpoints was around the time that they started setting off nail bombs in London.
Yeah.
You don't want that. No. It's bad form.
Yeah.
And frankly, it was just a bad time for everyone. And trust me, the old, you know, everything has been calm in Northern Ireland for the last 15 years, but those old, resentments are still there under the surface. And trust me, this is one of those things that could totally reignite the troubles again.
For Boris Johnson, it's just kind of a, you call him a, just a, I don't know, bozo, essentially. Yeah. He's a boorish person who oftentimes is just a non-human, essentially. Like, he doesn't know how to be a normal person.
Yeah.
Which has, like, led to videos you could find of, like, people interviewing him, and then he just gets on his bike, puts his helmet on, just drives and rides away.
Yeah. That seems about right.
And he was one of the chief people, misleading people to vote for Brexit, which means now essentially the inmates run the asylum.
Yeah.
And he's basically saying, like, we're not delaying this anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's, what, Halloween?
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be probably an actually scary day for the UK.
Yeah.
If they don't get any sort of deal in place.
Yeah.
It's basically the worst thing could happen in almost every part of their economy.
Mm-hmm.
And even just simple things like truckers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're going to be taking a lot longer.
Mm-hmm.
Get your food later. Anything that's perishable, it's going to be late. All the worst stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's like, how many countries can the leader step down and there's not a vote for who the next one is? It's not too many, is it?
No, shouldn't federally be that many, but apparently he's one of them.
Yeah, I don't think that's how it works in Canada. I mean, I know you guys have a parliament up there, Phil, but don't you guys have like a more direct way to elect your prime ministers?
Yeah, as far as we know, if somebody steps down, they set up an election and go right into it.
Yeah. And I think Boris Johnson has specifically ruled out any sort of further voting.
Mm-hmm.
Which is the weird thing, that the UK can just call up stuff, which is they've done a lot lately.
Mm-hmm.
Over the last, like, 5-10 years.
Because,
weirdly enough, they seem to keep electing terrible people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, kind of what happens when mostly the only people running are terrible people.
Mm-hmm.
You kind of run into that problem by default.
Yeah. He is basically the British Donald Trump, only he's slightly more eloquent, I guess, and that's only out of service of the fact that he's British.
Mm-hmm. And
British accents just sound more sophisticated to us.
Yeah. He's also been a star in the reasonably priced car on Top Gear, so I guess he has that.
That was pretty good.
Yeah. So.
All right. So, yeah, Boris Johnson, he's our asshole of the week.
Yeah.
God help Britain. Yeah, but anyway. And now for our hero of the week. And our hero of the week is a federal judge who this week officially blocked the Trump administration's new asylum restrictions. So for those of you who don't know, it's been basically over the last week or two, the Trump administration has been trying to shrink the number of asylum seekers that can come into the country to almost about zero. To the point that, I mean, they have actually bandied about just stop allowing asylum seekers in, period.
Mm. That seems like the goal.
Yeah. But here's the good thing. A federal judge came in and said, hey, guess what? No, you can't do that.
Mm.
It was U.S. District Judge John Tiger.
Uh-huh.
San Francisco. After a judge in Washington decided to let the rules stand while lawsuits played out in court.
Yeah.
Yep, so.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's really not much to add to that.
Yeah.
Except that, you know.
Cooler heads prevailed.
Yeah, cooler heads prevailed, and the Drumpen Four's limbs have been curtailed, at least for a little bit longer. Yeah, so that's good news. Of course, the camps are still open.
Yeah.
And all that shit, so. And another young person died in custody, so.
For us.
And also, just terrible stories of ICE picking up actual citizens.
Yeah.
Just because they look Latino.
Yeah, and kids going on their way to school and then holding them for 36 hours straight because they didn't quite look what they thought they should look like.
Hmm.
Yeah. There's one guy who got picked up. His brother's not a citizen, but he is, and they were just near the border.
Mm-hmm.
His brother got picked up, but he also got picked up with him, despite having like his papers on him.
Mm-hmm. It's true.
He spent like 3 weeks in custody.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, all right, that's got to be a great time to feel like, you know, an American citizen.
It's like, what's so great about this country again?
Yeah, we've been asking ourselves that a lot these last couple of months.
Hmm.
It's like, why do I bring this stuff with me if it doesn't matter?
Hmm.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
If the Gestapo decides they don't like it.
Hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but anyway, so now it's time to start the proper show proper. And we start off with good news that the Senate finally voted to make the 9/11 Victims Fund permanent. Well, at least up until, what was it, like 2050-something?
2090.
2090, yeah.
Which is all about permanent, essentially because permanent. By that point, pretty much anybody that would have been involved is probably going to be dead. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a 97-2 vote.
Who yeah, the two assholes and, are, let's see, where's it at? It's here at the bottom. Senator Mike Lee of Utah, Republican.
And
who,
Senator Rand Paul.
Yeah, they both introduced amendments for this.
Mm-hmm.
Mike Lee's was an amendment to increase oversight on the fund, which was voted down like 66%, essentially. Mm. Rand Paul's was obviously to change the funding source.
Mm-hmm.
And that got, I think, like 77 voting against it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So they're like both salty as hell, and they voted against this.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody else is like, yeah, sure, let's do this.
Yeah, fuck you people. yeah, so that's good news. And yes, Jon Stewart was there,
yeah.
If you're curious.
Yeah, that's
there's
a good
now,
shot of him.
Yeah, there's a file photograph of him basically smirking at the camera while Mitch McConnell. Yeah, while Mitch McConnell walks past him. It's
yeah. He's exactly. Like, oh, yeah, he's doing exactly what he's supposed to.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good. Fuck Rand Paul. I hope he loses the election, which I think he probably, to be honest, I'm going to be honest, most of the Republicans don't really have a very good shot coming up.
No.
A lot of them, there's like six of them that have already resigned. And a lot of them just have said they're not going to run.
Yeah.
For election next year. So, yeah. Anyway. And now for the other main event of the week. Robert Mueller finally went before Congress to have his hearing. It was a thing that happened, and that's about all you can really say.
Man, not much really came out of it other than he just kept reiterating the things that were in the report.
Yeah, and basically clarifying and saying, the big one that most people say is that a lot of people point out, well, there's two big ones. The first one is that he basically said that, yeah, Trump could totally be charged for obstruction after he leaves office.
Mm-hmm.
Which, yeah. Preview of coming attractions.
yeah.
And he also pointed out that, no, the Russian meddling totally was not a hoax. It totally happened. Now, whether or not it was actually coordinated with the Trump campaign, that is debatable at best.
Yeah.
But
they found evidence in all 50 states. That's
that they were actively involved in it, yes.
Yeah. I didn't watch much of the thing, but from what I heard, like, Republicans just spent most of their time spewing conspiracy theories at him.
Yeah, Devin Nunes tried to go in with all of his bluster to make himself out to be the big guy, and he basically crashed and burned.
So he pulled
so
up Devin.
Very hard. Yeah. And, like, at one point, there was a point when they put out, like, you know, one of those Republican congressmen is like, Mr. Mueller, you realize that a lot of the people in your department that you are working with are Democrats, right? And Bob was like, you know, I've been doing this for like 30-some-odd years, and never once have I considered the party affiliation of the people I'm working with me. I want to know if they can get the job done.
Yeah.
And he's very old school in that way.
Yeah.
He's also very old,
which was,
let's be honest, he never looked older.
Yeah. Well, he just spent several months researching this shit show. I mean, that's going to take it out of anybody.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, the big one, of course, is that it does, in fact, confirm that Russian hacking happened. They were actively trying to get Trump elected, and they were active in all 50 states.
Yeah.
So
odds
are. In fact, during this point, during the hearing, one of the congressmen said, so you would say it is in fact not a hoax that Russian has been meddling in our election. He said, oh, it's not a hoax. They're doing it right now as we speak.
So,
that part you could say, nope, that's not conspiracy. That is totally happening.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I like this bit when they were talking about the Trump tweeting about WikiLeaks in 2016. Mm-hmm. He's like,
but yeah, I would call that problematic at best.
And problematic is an understatement in terms of what it displays, in terms of giving some hope or some boost to what is and should be illegal activity.
Mm-hmm.
Also added that Trump Jr.'s Twitter messages exchanged with WikiLeaks were, quote, disturbing mm-hmm. and subject to investigation.
Yeah, that's a shit show, all right.
Indeed. Oh, God, 2020 cannot get here soon enough.
Yeah.
That's pretty much going to be our refrain until November 3rd, 2020.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, this shit cannot get here fast enough. Anyway, so, next up. So, Senator Wyden, a Democratic senator from the state of Oregon, who, amongst other things, is a hawk on cybersecurity and, you know, electronic privacy. He put out, he believes that if given the chance, the Trump administration would not only abuse wide-ranging surveillance powers, but would knowingly and actively abuse it, including encryption backdoors, which, I mean, where's the lie, though?
Yeah, I mean, this came out. This was basically what he said right after William Barr had done his bill, his mm-hmm. statement to Congress, to the Senate, basically saying, mm-hmm. "We want encryption backdoors, and if you don't give it to us, we are going to legislate it so that you have to." Pointing out a whole bunch of, you know, ridiculous scenarios like adding like a ghost participant to a to an encrypted conversation, which of the scenarios that he gave, that's actually the only one that is actually workable.
Mm-hmm. You know, and then there was a bunch of bullshit.
Yeah. So this statement from Senator Wyden basically came right after Barr had left.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, he lit into the whole thing, just flat out saying, this is a hugely bad idea, and just basically said flat out, he doesn't trust these people. I think this is the first time I've ever heard such an antagonistic rebuttal. I mean, I know that maybe I don't follow as closely, but this was like an out and out just no, these people are jerks mm-hmm. type of response.
And not only that, but a lot of them don't know how computers work, apparently.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, when you got one of Trump's chief lawyers, Rudy Giuliani, the cousin fucker, runs a security firm.
Mm-hmm.
Who you would never trust to do that.
Because
he can barely speak.
No.
He talks like he slurs, like he's drunk all the time. Then he fucked his cousin. Married cousin.
Be honest, if I had to work for the Trump administration, I'd probably drink all the time. But see, here's the thing. He does it by choice, so he doesn't have that excuse.
Yeah.
So but yeah,
something to keep in mind, because it seems like every decade or so, these law enforcement agencies tend to bang the drum about their going dark and not being able to surveil everybody.
Yeah,
and this is particularly egregious to me because it's the way that Barr actually segmented this out. It's basically, if you're big business, finance, military, yeah, you don't have to worry about that. You can have the good encryption. But if you're just the normal plebs, they're going to get the weak encryption because they're the ones we're really afraid of.
Yeah,
that's pretty telling.
Yeah.
Uh huh. Yeah. Yes, it is.
So.
But speaking of digital shit and digital breaches, Equifax has officially put out money for their $700 million settlement. Because you might remember back in 2017, they had a rather extensive data breach. And they're actually taking claims now. So at the link we provided, you can go there, and if you you know, enter your last name and the last six digits of your social security number. And they'll be able to find out whether or not you were affected by this breach. And if you are, there's like $125 in it for you.
Oh yeah, that totally solves all your problems.
Yeah, yeah, seriously.
Slapping on the wrist from the Equifax there.
Yeah, I think the only thing there is if you actually had to spend money to fix the issues that might have been caused by that data leaking.
Yeah.
You could get more money.
Yeah.
I think up to like $20,000 it says here.
Mm-hmm.
Depending on how much time and money you put into that stuff.
Yeah.
But for probably the average person where that stuff's probably not, they've probably not seen any effect of it. It's about $125.
So 700 million, to put that into perspective, after this data breach, Equifax actually made money because they sold identity theft protection for the loss of the data that they lost.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the, so there's three main credit agencies we have in this country, and each of them owns a identification protection system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Conveniently, if they get hacked, that's, hey, we'll give you a month of this for free or a year for free.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like that money's not enough.
No, it really isn't. This is the kind of thing that should have put them out of business, but it didn't because America.
Yeah, America. Here, we're free to completely fuck over our customers and not have to pay for it.
Yeah.
If you're important enough, there'll always be protections for you.
Yeah. That's freedom, bitch.
Yeah. We got another infuriating story next.
Oh, yeah. Facebook. Facebook, of course, has sort of shown for the last year, couple years that their privacy shit is, well, shit.
Broken.
They have no problem giving out your private information to third parties, especially if there's money in it for them. And they basically had to pay out a $5 billion settlement this week.
It was just the largest for the FTC to hand out.
Mm-hmm.
But also not nearly enough for what Facebook did.
Exactly.
Yeah, and like what they're required to do.
Yeah.
And what they're required to do as a result of this is also not enough.
Yeah. You know what's really infuriating? The day of the settlement, Facebook made $6 billion in stock. So basically it did this.
They basically made all the money back
that day. And then some. So, America.
Yeah. And I think the EF basically pointed out how insufficient any of this is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which, for those who don't know, is the Electronic
Frontier Foundation.
Foundation, yeah. EFF. They have a good write-up on that as well. We just have the Ars Technica write-up on this.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's basically them getting a slap on the wrist.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much.
Real accountability. Like, yeah, it's an irritating.
There is no need for writing cyberpunk anymore. We live it.
Yeah. Yeah, we should probably do it. One day we should talk about why the stock market is a complete scam, but we'll save that for another day.
Yeah, we'll probably have to bring some Marx into that too. But again, another day.
Yep.
But, yeah, so other than that, moving on. Senator Elizabeth Warren, who of course is currently in the running for being the Democratic nominee for President of the United States, and her chances are, in fact, pretty good. She's in, along with Biden, Harris, and Sanders.
And I would say, I guess, Buttigieg
is still
in there. Like, those
he's
like
still
the
in
five.
There. He's still kind of middling.
Yeah.
But that's, like, his appeal is, like, he's not too strong
anything,
in anything.
Really.
No.
Yeah.
He's the
He's another
candidate.
Obama-type centrist, basically.
Yeah, like, if you're not into Biden being an old centrist, Buttigieg is your young centrist.
Yeah. Basically, he is the millennial candidate, as the media would consider it to be.
Yeah.
Because, you know, he's a veteran of the wars in Afghanistan. You know, he is not only openly gay, but is also one of the first one of the first people to benefit from the, people don't realize it's barely even 10 years old, the gay marriage ruling.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that he's also a musician and is apparently fairly hip with the kids to an extent.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. And is apparently more, technologically literate than the older generation.
Which, let's be honest, we could use some of that.
Yeah. But, one of the big things that Elizabeth Warren has been touting out there for one of her reasons why she should be the candidate is her plan for canceling student loan debt, which, I'm going to be honest, it's a good idea, but she totally cribbed it from Bernie Sanders.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, let's be honest, the only reason you have so many people in the running for the Democratic Party who are openly touting these social democratic causes is pretty much because of Bernie.
Yeah, Bernie came around for the 2016.
Yeah, Bernie came around for the 2016 election and basically changed the entire game.
Yeah.
And I think
now
their benefits, like people being afraid of him, means they're slightly less extreme policies are going to be the more appealing.
Yeah.
And like maybe the way that we get like Medicare for all and this student loan canceling program sort of stuff going on.
Yeah. And I want to be clear. If Warren ends up being the nominee, I will have absolutely no problem voting for her.
Same.
Yeah.
Hell, if Biden ends up being the nominee, I will have absolutely no problem voting for him.
Blue no matter who, for sure.
I don't care who it is. As long as they beat Donald Trump, I will be happy. But,
yep. Yeah.
But anyway, the point is, she finally put out the bill that she had been writing for her student loan debt cancellation this week so that everybody could take a look at it.
Yeah, it's called the Student Loan Debt Relief Act, partnered with Rep. Jim Clyburn, the number three House Democrat, who's sponsoring a similar companion measure for the chamber. He has not discussed it with the House leaders yet, but yeah, they're going to be working on that for the fall. But she basically says student loan debt in this nation has reached crisis proportions. We're at about a little bit over $1.5 trillion of outstanding debt.
Mm-hmm.
And she says it's a drag on the entire economy. And the plan essentially canceling up to $50,000 of debt for all borrowers earning less than $100,000. And it goes proportionally less up to the next few tiers up, which would cancel a significant, if not hopefully all of your debt.
Yeah.
Depending on how much money you're earning to be able to pay that stuff off.
Mm-hmm.
And like those loans are just ridiculous, first off, compared to even more regular type of loans you might get. The interest rates and all that, it's like a lot of people that have them are basically paying like as much as their rent on their loans, if not more. And it's like you can't have a life with that kind of debt.
No.
That you're kind of forced if
with
you're
that kind,
at any
of,
kind of post-school, when, you know, learning.
Yeah, with that kind of mark on your credit, it's hard to get a house or buy a car or
live
a lot of the other stuff that's essential for living in 21st century America. Mm-hmm. So
that's why a lot of millennials aren't having kids like in their teens or 20s.
And why a lot of millennials have to work two or three jobs.
Yeah.
And have to move back in with their parents.
And they're supposed to be the lazy ones, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, basically student loans are fucking up the economy because basically
have generations of people
no
that can't.
Into the economy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, they're putting in their limited amounts out there to get like a phone or games or maybe a cheap car or something like that. But not really living to the way that like our parents and grandparents did when they got out of high school.
Yeah.
I hope this passes because that'd be good for a lot of people.
Oh, yeah. I hope so. And I'm going to tell you, though, there's been, you know, because the thing with, especially with, education in the United States is there's been this entire profit structure that's been built around it that has basically been sucking the United States dry for the last 60, 70 years.
Mm-hmm.
And it's finally coming to a head. but the old guard is fighting it tooth and nail to keep it in place.
Yes, yeah,
that is a benefit off of it. These mm-hmm. are the banks that got bailed out 10 years ago.
Yeah.
They're back at it, but now colleges are involved because they're charging more.
Yeah.
Unless you get having to be one of the lucky ones to get a scholarship or maybe get a... Some schools actually now have, like, cheaper plans or free ones
mm-hmm.
if you're, like, in-state going.
Yeah.
I think Texas does that, University of Texas and some others. But, yeah, it's also interesting, like, hey, if you're, like, 50-plus, guess what? College is real cheap to go to classes.
Yeah.
It's like, Jesus Christ, this would be perfect for, you know, kids.
Yeah.
That are getting out of school, like maybe don't know what they want to do just yet. Mm. They could take classes, like try out different things, see what they want to do without committing to, you know, 4 years of debt.
Yeah.
There's a lot of good stuff we could do, but we don't because there are whole sections of this economy that are built on tossing his loans around and selling it
mm-hmm.
to other loan sharks and other businesses so that by the time, you know, you may eventually pay it off, it's probably changed a dozen hands.
Yeah.
And these different companies having your information, who knows if they actually protect it well enough?
They don't.
And yeah, that's where more of this privacy shit goes to shit.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's great that people do actually buy up some of that debt to forgive it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like John Oliver did on his show a few years
mm-hmm.
ago. Mm. Essentially, Pass Oprah is like the greatest giveaway on TV history.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But yeah. Anyway. So moving on from there. The people of Puerto Rico basically rose up as one, and their governor, Ricardo Rosello, has resigned after several days of protest over these obscene, kind of racist texts that he sent to his people, to his various people in his administration.
Yep. And he, like, refused for several days. Like, at most was going, like, well, I'm not going to run for election again.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But it was, like, digging in his heels, and then I guess at some point, like, came to the excuse of, like, I didn't realize how mad people were. It's like, there's
motherfucker,
thousands
you
could have
looked out your
outside.
Window and seen it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I thought they were just partying.
I mean, it is Puerto Rico, and you know how they love parades, but...
Yeah, still.
Yeah. I want to say, who was it, the singer from Puerto Rico?
Ricky Martin.
Yes, he was out there with his gay pride parade flag,
mm-hmm.
waving that out there, joining the people. I know, like, Lin-Manuel Miranda was doing his own protesting and his family.
Mm-hmm.
It's still down there, like, all that sort of stuff. Like, it was a huge... protest.
Oh, yeah, it was a big thing.
Yep.
It was pretty amazing to see.
Yeah.
Might
be a model to follow.
Yes, America. Yeah, might want to pay attention there. Mm-hmm. Can do that, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, but Trump will be able to just wait it out. Test people's ability to not go to work for several days.
Yeah. See, I mean, the thing is with the people in Puerto Rico is a lot of them really didn't have much to lose, so...
Yeah, they already lost a lot in the hurricane.
Yeah. But, anyway...
It's also a small island. That's the big difference, is, like, you're not going to get a ton of people out of, like, the Nova area.
Mm-hmm.
Going to Washington, D.C. to protest outside of some particular groups, but...
Mm.
A lot of people are like, yeah, I got to work or I got kids to take care of, that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's the thing people don't really realize when we don't have, like, millions of people going to this one specific location. It's like, this country is fucking huge.
Yeah.
It's like top 5, top 10 biggest countries in the world.
No, it's in the top 5.
Yeah. And it's like, not everybody... Like, we have a surprising amount of people here that don't leave their state in their lifetime,
mm-hmm.
much less go across the country.
I'm 33 years old, and the farthest north I've ever been is Charleston, North Carolina. I mean, South Carolina.
Hmm.
Yeah.
And the farthest south I've ever been is Orlando. And the farthest west I've been is the Georgia-Alabama state border.
Yeah, I've been all over the place. Not in a long time, though.
Mm-hmm.
I've been over to California, to Florida, up to Canada. Not much in the Northwest or Northeast outside of going to, like, mm-hmm. New York.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah.
Okay.
All right. Well, okay. So, moving on from there. Over down in Gretna, Louisiana, there's a couple police officers that went on Facebook and basically said that AOC needed to be shot. And then they got fired, because they should have been.
Yep. I believe one of the officers, Charlie Rispoli,
mm-hmm.
Basically suggested she needed a round. And the other one, Angelo Verisco, mm-hmm. liked the post, supporting it. Rispoli had posted a fake news story about Ocasio-Cortez to his Facebook page Thursday, included a comment calling the New York Democrat a vile idiot and saying she needs a round. And I don't mean the kind she used to serve when she was a bartender.
Classy.
You know, they always keep, you realize they always keep focusing on the bartender thing. And the reason is because they always have to leave out the fact that, you know, she graduated from Boston University and was a high school teacher.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, that's what she was doing before she ran.
Yeah.
She also liked it. But yeah, it's very much the sort of thing that you definitely do not want the people policing your towns to be suggesting about government leaders.
No.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if you're posting fake news stories.
Yeah.
And Ocasio-Cortez posted about this, tweet about it. So the president is sowing violence. He's creating an environment where people can get hurt, and he claims plausible deniability. I think Trump even, like, talking about the squad this week was, like, trying to say, like, they're the real racist.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of gone to that point now in the racist timeline.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, you're the racist, and I'm not the racist.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of thing. But, yeah, they got, fired by their captain, who, basically is like, I don't know what their intent was. He's talking about the site that posted the fake news. Mm-hmm. If getting people fired was their intent, it worked. It certainly took someone and exposed a weakness that they had and cost them their career, cost two people their careers. It's sad. It's a tough lesson, but hopefully it's a lesson learned not only by our department, but other law enforcement agencies as well.
Yeah, and just to show you how stupid these two assholes really are, the website they got, because, like, the article that this was inspired by was from a website called Tater Gonna Tate. It's an obvious satire site.
Hmm.
Yeah. But also, Facebook, they now do the thing where they'll point out something is fake, but not actually remove it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It'll just be, like, a little note on there, like, this news is not real or whatever it is.
Yeah.
It's like, that's not enough.
No.
Because if the people are inclined to believe it, they will believe it no matter what you say.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
The only way you get them to not believe it is not show it to them.
Mm-hmm. All right. Dumb people are dumb.
Yeah.
And dumb people with badges are even dumber.
Speaking of dumb people.
Yeah. So President Trump hosted an event that was hosted by Turning Point USA.
Hmm.
Yeah.
We are all familiar with this group.
Of upstanding citizens.
Yeah. And he basically got trolled in front of everyone there because at some point it was probably either someone inside the organization or something. They put up a altered presidential seal that's basically supposed to be a giant fuck you to Trump.
Mm-hmm.
So first things first, the eagle on the seal has two heads that look like the Imperial Russian eagle,
mm-hmm.
you know, the symbol of the czar. In the claw where the eagle is supposed to be holding arrows, you know, representing war, he is holding a bunch of golf clubs.
And, that was fantastic.
Yeah, and in the claw where he's supposed to be holding an olive branch representing peace, he's holding a wad of cash.
Mm-hmm.
And over the little banner over its head that's supposed to say E Pluribus Unum, it basically says in Dutch, 45 is a puppet.
I love everything about this.
Somebody has some amazing art direction talent there to pull that off. And what I particularly like is that they didn't really notice.
No, he doesn't pay attention to stuff like that.
I mean, why would he know? Why would he notice if there was anything wrong with the presidential seal? It's not like he's ever looked at it.
Yep. It's true.
No, it's behind him. Why would he look at it?
Yeah, yeah, it was amazing.
Yeah, this is the kind.
So of... whoever it was that the TPUSA made out to be the scapegoat for it, they fired them. Mm. They claimed that it happened because of a rushed Google image search.
Yeah, sure.
Mm. But anyway.
Yeah, you're going to have the President of the United States at your event. You're just going to quickly Google some images.
Yeah.
Mm.
Not vet anything.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, anyway, next up from there, way over in Australia. God damn, this is such an Australian story. There's a drug runner over in Australia who was driving his van full of crystal methamphetamine that he then crashed into a parked police car.
Yeah, totaled it.
Yeah.
He was arrested after crashing a van packed with $200 million, about $140 million of methamphetamine into a parked patrol car parked outside a police station in Sydney, Australia.
Mm-hmm.
28-year-old driver hit the car at speed, crushing its bonnet before racing off. Police caught him about an hour later in Eastwood, a suburb of the city's north. And it contained about 273 kilograms of meth.
That's a lot of meth.
Which is about 600 pounds.
Yeah, that is definitely a lot of meth.
Yeah.
Authorities said no one was injured in the crash, but the police car sustained significant damage. As you can see, like, the entire front side is just crushed.
Mm-hmm.
Did he call himself Heisenberg? Or
I don't know, but they say the price of crystal meth in Australia is among the highest in the world, driving the country's organized crime gangs to trade increasingly in the drug.
Mm.
I mean, meth is already time-consuming to make. And considering Australia's drug laws, it's got to be particularly difficult to get all that shit together.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Well, this guy's going to jail for a good long time. And
also, it's like an island, so.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's no illegal search and seizure here because the dude crashed it to the. That may be probable cause for investigation. I'm not sure, but I'm pretty sure that.
It's like, why was this guy driving so weirdly?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, he crashed into an official police vehicle, which in and of itself, while it was parked, which in and of itself is already a criminal case.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's got two charges, at least so far, drug supply and negligent driving offenses.
Yeah, well, one of those is more severe than the others.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, he ruined a perfectly good car.
Let's see. Next up, SpaceX. You know, that's Elon Musk's little space adventure outfit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, its Dragon capsule, which is going to be launched, found out today. He announced that it's going to be taking both some Nickelodeon green slime to the International Space Station.
Yep. It's about 5,500 pounds of stuff that's going up there for the six astronauts aboard the ISS.
Mm.
Let's see. Launched about 6 o'clock yesterday, 6 p.m.
Mm.
In that is Nickelodeon green slime, as well as Adidas soccer balls to do some tests for that sort of stuff.
Yep.
Yeah, it's sending slime to the space station for educational purposes, and you spread the fun for a new generation. We're going to slime a couple of astronauts and put it through a couple of demonstrations, as they say.
Zero-G slime sounds kind of interesting, so...
Yeah.
Those astronauts have a lot of fun over there, apparently.
Yeah, he said the astronauts will capture video of how the slime moves in microgravity, and the material will be used to develop a curriculum for young students that can roll out as soon as September.
Yeah. All right. So yeah, we're gonna see where that goes. So in news to make you stay up late into the night, asteroid the size of something that could have wiped out a city just barely missed the Earth this week, and nobody saw it coming.
Yeah, I think we saw it like a few days ago and identified it was an astronaut like a few hours before it went by.
Yeah.
But it was close enough that if you knew exactly where to look, you could see it with binoculars. But yeah, the asteroid is named 2019 OK.
Well.
I mean, appropriate, I think.
Yeah. Estimated between 187 feet and 427 feet in diameter. Came within about 43,500 miles of striking the Earth.
Yeah, that's pretty close.
Closer than the moon.
Yeah.
Which I think is, what, 140,000? Something like that?
About that, yeah.
I can look it up real quick. But, yeah, it's... Okay, 238,000. Okay, I was thinking about 240. Okay. Yeah, it was flying towards us in the direction of the sun, making it hard to spot. It was only first seen a few days ago. Yeah. Well, confirmed in the past day. Let's see. Had the asteroid hit, the impact would have been comparable to the... Let's see. It would have hit with over 30 times the energy of the atomic blast at Hiroshima. Which is a city killer asteroid level. Let's see. They said today's incident was one of the closest known approaches to Earth by an asteroid. The asteroid is so close, yeah. If you're looking at the right spot in the sky, be able to see with only binoculars. And let's see. It has been near the Earth before, but never so close. It was last near here about 2017, February 2017.
Mm-hmm.
It was over 25 million miles away.
Mm-hmm.
Is next expected to come within 46 million miles of Earth in 2024. The sun is about 93 million miles away from our planet, as far as how to compare that distance.
Yeah. Well, luckily that's, I think, about as close as it could get on the orbit, on the trajectory that it's on, so...
Yeah.
Thankfully. Yeah.
We know they're going to be keeping their telescopes out in that direction for a while now. You never know, there might be something behind it.
Yeah, and in case you're wondering, that was just one of four that flew by the Earth on Wednesday. That was the closest and the largest. There's asteroid HM10, which passed by about 2.9 million miles. 2019 OD was, 219,000 miles. And asteroid 2019 OE came within 602,000 miles from Earth.
Yeah, but nothing is as close as
OE. Yeah.
So.
And as big.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how close did the 2019 OK come?
40 something thousand miles.
It was right. Let's see. Yeah, up here 43,500 miles.
Wow, that was close.
Very close.
And the Earth itself is, I think, about 7,900 miles in diameter.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah. They're definitely going to keep their telescopes in that direction now, because if it came that close, might be something coming behind it.
Yeah. Never know.
Anyway. Yeah. So, and now... We're out of the serious part, and now we're into the entertainment portion. And first, some sad news. Netflix has canceled Tuca and Birdie after one season, which is sad.
Yeah,
I liked it a lot.
It was a really well-done show.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just listening to people talk about it. Like, yeah, it's a show like where there is Birdie and her... Is a husband?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, boyfriend.
Boyfriend.
Something like that, yeah.
Like, when they have issues, they actually, like, talk it out, don't yell at each other. They actually come to, you know, compromises and that sort of stuff. Like, Tuca is, like, a sober person at a certain point.
Yeah.
And, like, she doesn't really, they don't use, like, relapsing as, like, a story point.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that sort of stuff. There's positive female representation that, and stories that aren't just like, oh, you took my man, all that sort of typical female mm-hmm. writing. Like, you can definitely tell, like, women were involved in the not only creation but the writing process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
To keep everything at a good like story beat.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't and, resonate with enough people, like,
or whatever that means for Netflix, because they bring on so much stuff. I would imagine like most of it doesn't hit like, you know, millions and millions of people.
Yeah. Mm.
And I think this sort of show that would be worth, you know, just funding for a while, for a few seasons. So I think they just announced Big Mouth is renewed for like 3 seasons.
Yeah.
Which I've heard good things about that show.
It's all right.
Yeah.
It definitely turned out to be better than people thought it was when they first started watching it.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, Netflix, you have a shit ton of money to spend on everything. Guess what? You're not going to be spending money on The Office next year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Invest some of the more interesting and original content you have.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because you're not going to have tons of that big stuff that comes from other networks, because they're going to be slowly moving everything away.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
To their own little silo.
Yeah.
Because they think everybody's going to pay, you know, $10-$15 for each network's offerings.
Yeah.
And it's like, no.
Mm.
It's like when you can get your own original stuff, you should be fully investing in that stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like Netflix and Hulu and Amazon Prime have been.
Mm. We got The Witcher coming, so that's good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. But, yeah, so.
I think the creator, Lisa Hannawalt, has basically said they're going to shop it around, see what they can find.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Be surprised if like Hulu or Amazon pick it up.
Yeah.
Keep it going.
Yeah. So other than that, there's also news that Netflix is bringing Invader Zim. It's going to be a movie called Enter the Florpus, and it comes out August 16th. That's about
3 weeks
away.
3 weeks.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep. They got a little teaser here on the tweet and looks pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
I think they also put out a Marvel full trailer for Rocko's Modern Life.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that style, they did a really good job with that to make it look good in HD and kind of avoid the whole like flash look that some of those old shows do.
Yeah.
When they redo their art for current tech.
Yeah.
And that's out, I think, the 6th, about a week or so from now.
Yeah.
It would be really cool if Nickelodeon licensed out the shows for these two different properties.
Mm.
Like, say, hey, if you like that, here's some more stuff.
Yeah.
Makes sense, especially for like Invader Sim, which is something I just never got around to watching.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, you know, I'd probably check this out, probably not know exactly what the hell's going on with these characters. but I would definitely like to see the whole thing.
Yeah. All right. Well, next up, we got news from San Diego Comic-Con. And before we get into the trailers and stuff, we got to talk very quickly about comics, because the X-Men family of comics is getting a major reboot. And the whole set is getting a complete reboot. And that reboot started this week with the release of the first issue of House of X.
Yes. Highly recommended reading if you haven't already. It's a little unsettling seeing where everything starts, but I'm guessing that a focal point of the reboot itself will be watching how this sort of new mutant utopia goes tits up.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's going to be a 12-week arrangement with a book coming out every week, alternating House of X and Powers of Ten.
Mm-hmm.
The House of X series is going to focus on a month in the history of mutants that just changes the status quo for them worldwide.
Yep.
And Powers of Ten is going to be a gigantic world-building exercise that really sets the table for the for a lot of new characters that are going to be introduced. over the course of the story arc. And once we're done, we're seeing a full line relaunch out with six books.
Yeah, so those six books that we're talking about is going to be X-Men, obviously.
Yeah, that's going to be the main overarching, of course.
Yeah, we also got the New Mutants, which is the sort of X-Men's version of the Teen Titans, I guess you could say.
This is a bit of a different take on it.
Yeah.
This is the original lineup of New Mutants with the addition of Chamber and Mondo from the original Generation X.
Yeah, so basically it's going back to late 80s, early 90s.
Yeah, they're going to be exploring storylines that have kind of that follow that cast where they kind of left off. So that
yeah, the only difference is that Rob Liefeld isn't shitting all over it. So
yeah,
because he's the one who did all that stuff.
Yeah.
Like, he's the reason why New Mutants eventually became X-Force and became such a huge hit in the first place.
Yep.
I mean, nobody wants to admit it. So. Yeah. Well, no. He created Deadpool the same way Bob Kane created Batman. Shots fired. And then after that, we got Fallen Angels.
That's an interesting one. It's going to follow Quanon, Cable, and X-23.
Yep.
And
AKA Girl Wolverine.
Yeah. And although she is going back to the X-23 persona, which I think is a bit of a regression for her.
Yeah, I liked her as Wolverine.
Run as Wolverine.
Yeah.
But the descriptions of this particular book seem interesting because it talks about a character who basically was killed just as quickly as they returned into Quanon's life. And it's about a small group of mutants who are trying to figure out a place for themselves in this whole new world, this new status quo. And when you go by the name of the book, I'm wondering if they're killing Warren off.
Wow. They might.
So that's it's worth thinking about.
Yeah. Then we got the Marauders.
Pirates.
Yep.
Led by Captain Catherine Pride.
Yep.
And going around just taking care of mutants that are still kind of in bad situations all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
This has a lot of potential as an interesting read, and I'm really looking forward to the first month of it.
Yeah, because the original Marauders were supervillains. Like they started out during the Inferno event way back in 1989.
Back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting to see that name brought back as well. But I'm into this. I like the concept, and I like the roster they've put forth.
Mm-hmm.
Can't wait to take a look at it.
Yeah. But yeah. Then of course we got X-Force, because if you're going to do New Mutant, you got to bring the X-Force back too.
The X-Force has always been kind of the CIA branch of the X-Men, and
they're the ones who do the wet works.
Yep.
Stuff.
In a perfect world, we would not need them, but it is not yet a perfect world. So,
yeah.
Like, there's a reason why, you know, they were such a huge hit when they first landed.
Yeah.
Because it was that era of comics, and it fit it perfectly.
Yeah, I'm interested to see how Black Tom meshes with this team, because apparently he's on the roster this time around. Mm. So, yeah, other than that, you've got a lot of pretty standard names and being headed up by Wolverine. So,
yep. Well, I mean, Wolverine has been heading up them for a while. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
So we got that. And then finally we got Excalibur.
Yes. This is Betsy Braddock as a new Captain Britain.
Mm-hmm.
Leading a team of mutants.
A lot of them old school. We got Rogue there. We got Jubilee. We got Gambit. Yep. And Apocalypse, apparently.
Yep.
Victor is there.
Okay.
So it's going to be about how this new world for mutants meshes with sort of magical inclined world. I can't remember which one it was. I haven't read a whole lot in about the world that it'll be interacting with, but it does seem to be a bit of a multiverse hopper, and just with the character lineup they're putting forth, I'm going to have to at least check it out.
Yeah.
Because it looks batshit insane.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm here for it.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. So that's basically what it is for comics. Now for the trailers. So first trailer we got is for a movie called A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood. It's a Mr. Rogers biopic.
Yeah. Featuring Tom Hanks.
Yep. Because let's be honest, there's really nobody else.
And the only real issue is that Tom Hanks' build is a little bit too big for Fred Rogers. But
yeah.
Other than that, like that's the only thing that really stands out.
Yeah.
Maybe the voice a little bit, but otherwise it seems like it's going to be a really good movie if you want to try to find the perfect time to be alone in the theater.
Mm-hmm.
To cry.
Yeah.
Well, there was the documentary, the other one there, Won't You Be My
Friend? Yeah.
But you can also watch if you want to cry. So,
yeah, that's now you can do that in your own home.
Yeah.
Yep.
This one you got to go pay to go somewhere else to cry.
Yeah.
Unless you wait and then you can cry at home. But,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But then everybody will spoil it for you. So.
Oh, yeah.
But I'm not sure when this one comes out.
Mm. It's been in the works for a while.
November 2019. Yeah, okay.
This fall.
Mm. I like their URL, abeautifulday.movie.
Yeah.
I didn't know they had .movie URLs.
Yeah, that's exactly.
There's a lot of those new types of top-level domains now.
When I was doing the when I was laying the groundwork for World Warriors, I found all sorts of suffixes that I had no idea existed.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think my favorite URL is f1.cool. It's for the F1 podcast that former Giant Bomb people used to do.
Mm-hmm.
Now they're on their own, but
you know there's .ninja, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
But and then we got a trailer for a Harriet Tubman biopic, which, of course, considering she's going to be on our currency pretty soon,
mm-hmm.
you know, it might be a good idea to educate people on who she was, which was awesome, basically.
Yeah.
So that's what this trailer seems to show.
Mm-hmm.
It's called Harriet. It's out November 1st. And starts from when she was a slave and her breaking out, getting to the North.
Mm-hmm.
And then wanted to go back and rescue her family and a bunch of others.
Mm.
Mm.
Sort of show like the whole process that she went through.
Yeah.
All the risks she took and all that to save a ton of people.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. Yeah. Sounds cool. Next up, Zombieland Double Tap, which, of course, is the sequel to Zombieland. And it also was... partly filmed in my town,
mm-hmm.
so you might see the gas station that has Jesus Will Save You on the little billboard. Yeah, that's the gas station just down the road from where I live.
Nice.
I know those people. It was made specifically for the movie. They don't have it there 24/7.
Yeah.
Probably see some places from downtown Macon in there too.
This is set in Washington D.C.
Yeah,
so there's a good bit where they're in the White House.
Mm-hmm.
This is obviously after the zombie apocalypse, so there's nobody in there.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
So they're kind of just hanging out, making a mess, doing Trumpian stuff in there, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's out October 18th.
Yep.
Mm. All right. Sounds good to me. Then we got Jojo Rabbit, which is a movie from Taika Waititi. It's basically a satirical Hitler movie and proves that, yes, you can totally make those kinds of movies in the modern day in spite of what the anti-SJW hordes would have you believe.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's just that the movie actually has to not suck.
Yeah.
Yeah, and playing Hitler is none other than Taika Waititi
himself, because... apparently nobody wanted to take the role.
There was a good joke I saw on Twitter. It's like, I'm not really comfortable with him playing Hitler. There should have been a white person that did this. Somebody's called, yeah, they're Kiwi washing Hollywood all over again. But yeah, they got, let's see, Taika Waititi, Rebel Wilson, Stephen Merchant, Alfie Allen, Sam Rockwell, Scarlett Johansson, a bunch of people in it.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. It's also October 18th. Mm-hmm. So you can go see that and then go see Zombieland or the other way around.
Yeah.
Yeah. Seems like a perfectly silly movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then we got, well, it's going to be silly, but also maudlin at the same time because, because of where the movie is set and in what time period.
Yeah.
So it's going to happen eventually.
Yep.
Then we got the trailer for Star Trek Picard.
Yes. And boy, which is never good.
Yeah, which is, of course, Jean-Luc Picard after he left the Federation service.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we find out why. And why, you know, he's a farmer now, apparently.
Yeah. And he has a dog.
He has a dog. There are things he's doing. He has a life.
Yeah, he has a life, and then somebody from his past joins him again.
Yeah.
Things start to happen. It was really good seeing Patrick Stewart again, especially in this role, I think. He said at one point that there was one role that he wanted to get back to more than anything, and Picard was it. So it's nice that he's actually doing that now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But, and
that's
then
out early 2020.
CBS
All Access. Yeah. Except for probably up north where you get it in Netflix.
Netflix and space on TV.
Yeah. And next up, we talked earlier about how Netflix has The Witcher. Well, HBO has Watchmen.
Yeah.
And this is actually a proper trailer and not just the teaser that we got, what was it, like last month?
Yeah.
But basically, this Watchmen series is a sequel to the original book. If everyone remembers how Watchmen originally ended, it ends right around the time, you know, when the guy from the New Frontiersman finds Rorschach's journal in the slush pile. Well, this kind of is like what happens after that. Yeah. And basically, a bunch of people start a Rorschach cult.
Yeah.
As you would guess would happen.
Yeah. And bad shit starts to happen.
Oh, yeah. There's a Rorschach cult. Adrian Veidt is still around, but may or may not be dead. We see someone who may or may not be the Silk Spectre.
And Doc Manhattan shows up at the end.
Yeah. Or it may be Doc Manhattan. It may not be.
Somebody that's blue themselves.
Yeah.
He's got to
be a better way to
on.
Say that.
There's no better way to say that.
Yeah. Cue dejected Charlie Brown and the Peanuts music.
Do-do-do-do-do.
As for the police, because of what the Rorschach cult people were doing, basically all the police have started taking on superhero personas of one form or another.
Yeah.
And apparently there's also like a American Crime Story type documentary series called American Hero Story.
Yeah.
There's a lot of references and shit to it that I want to see this so bad.
Yeah, I like this.
A very dense trailer.
Mm-hmm. I like this one poster on the wall in this one scene where it says, four important presidents.
And one of them is Robert Redford.
Yeah. Washington, Lincoln, Nixon, and Redford.
Yeah. Because remember in the Watchmen timeline, Nixon ended up getting reelected for like, what was it, like a third or fourth term? And then Redford, I guess, they hint that Redford is running for president at the end of the book, and I guess he ends up becoming president in this timeline at some point. That was it for the trailer Palooza, and now we got to talk about the Marvel Cinematic Universe because they revealed their Phase 4 projects at Comic-Con this week.
There's a lot of
So them. The first and the soonest one that's coming is Black Widow. Black Widow is finally getting a movie of her own.
Yeah, I think we'll say here that
May 1st, 2020.
Spoilers for Endgame. amongst these, since it obviously takes place afterwards.
Yeah but so I mean, that movie is now the highest grossing movie in history, so if you haven't seen it yet by now, that's your own damn fault.
But yeah, Marvel's in the place where they're going to start actively spoiling things if you're going to follow along with what's going on. So yeah, Black Widow's obviously going to be a prequel. Because she does not make it through Endgame.
No, she does not. Work there, Disney. Next up, we got The Falcon and Winter Soldier, which is from fall 2020.
Yep, that's going to be a Disney Plus show. And so because of what happens in Endgame, you know, it's essentially Captain America and Winter Soldier. With the new Captain America being the Falcon.
Then we got the Eternals, which is definitely going to be interesting to see what they do with the Eternals.
Eternals is, were they all like celestial beings, essentially?
The Eternals are sort of like, the way they make it out in the comics is that the Eternals are like this alien presence that occasionally, like whatever, like the Eternal gene or whatever will get released onto a planet somewhere, and it'll give them superpowers like mutants, and it's like Medusa and the King, I guess his name's Black Bolt or something. Basically,
well, that would be the Inhumans, I think.
That's the Inhumans. Sorry, shit. My fault. Okay, the Eternals, I have no idea. Oh, the Eternals. That's the, fuck, I know I've heard of them before, because I know Neil Gaiman wrote for them for a little while. I'm stumped. There's too much comics yet.
Yeah, and like a lot of these projects, I was looking up like the directors, and it's a lot of people that have not done much of note. So they're definitely in a phase where they're kind of just finding a lot of interesting people to work on some stuff for them.
Which is a good approach, because, I mean, it's worked for them in the past.
Like Taika Waititi would not be doing the stuff he does now without getting the chance to do Thor Ragnarok. And yeah, they got some big names on the Eternals with Angelina Jolie, Kumail Nanjiani, Selma Hayek. They got Richard Madden of Game of Thrones fame, and some others here. And I think this is the one where they have an actress that is deaf. And she's playing the first deaf superhero in the MCU. Which is pretty cool.
Awesome. Next. Then we got Shang-Chi, The Legend of the Ten Rings, based on Shang-Chi, Master of Kung Fu.
And this is where the Mandarin, the real Mandarin, comes into play.
What's about fucking time?
If you did not know, like the Mandarin that is fought in, what is it, Iron Man 2 or 3? It's not the real one. And they actually seeded like Mandarin logos in a number of MCU movies, which they showed off when they were talking about this movie. Like, if you didn't catch it, like here's these like Ten Ring logo. That is in a bunch of different movies. This, like, this person has the tattoo and is part of this whole like cult or whatever it is that's they're in. And it's like, oh yeah, we've been seeing this all along. And this one is Asian focused. Obviously,
it's basically wuxia, you know, kung fu shit.
The director
probably
is from,
be a huge hit in Japan. I mean, China.
The director is from Hawaii. I forget what specific place he comes from, but Hawaii is like a big Asian melting pot because it's where a lot of the Asian countries are closest to. But yeah, this, like a lot of these are also projects that were like approved or in production recently. I think Black Widow, like they had started like 30 days ahead of that. And Shang-Chi, the person they signed for the main roles, like a few days earlier. He just got the role and it's like, all right, we need you to come to San Diego Comic-Con right away, which is pretty fun. Yeah, that'll be February 12th, 2021.
And then we got WandaVision, which comes out in spring 2021.
Yep, that's a weird show with Scarlet Witch. His first name is Wanda. And Vision, who, which will be weird because if you haven't seen Infinity War and Endgame, he's dead. he wasn't killed in a way that could be brought back, at least as far as we know. So it's like, and the logo treatment for this is very like 40s, 50s kind of classic television kind of style. logo, so people are like, maybe it's taking place then, which also just still doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's potential for some interesting stuff here.
Yeah.
But also, there's going to be Monica Rambeau that mm-hmm. you might have seen in Captain Marvel as a little girl there.
Yeah.
They got an actress to play her as an adult.
Okay.
So she'll also be a factor there. What else? I think it's about it. That's Spring 2021. That's a Disney Plus show.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. And speaking of Disney Plus shows, we also got Loki.
Coming in spring 2021. Yeah, this is another Endgame spoiler. Mm-hmm. It's something I told mm-hmm. somebody who liked Loki in the previous to the Endgame stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Basically gets killed at the beginning of Infinity War.
Yeah.
In a way that he would not get brought back. And so this is an alternate reality Loki that so they go time traveling back to the times of different MCU movies. And mm-hmm. this Loki gets the one of the gems dropped in front of him. He manages to grab it and escape. Mm-hmm. And this is the adventures of that Loki.
All right.
Based on the time when that happened, he would not be the one that has essentially gone through a redemption arc.
All right.
So this would be like bad guy Loki. Like what adventures he has. This would be spring 2021. Tom Hiddleston obviously returns. And that would be interesting, like weird alternate reality kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
For that.
I'll see where that goes.
Yeah.
Also, we got Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness.
Yep, this is a movie. It's mm-hmm. the next Doctor Strange movie.
Yep.
I think the way they framed it is like even though Quentin Beck, who is
Mysterio
mm-hmm. In the new movie, was lying about being from an alternate universe mm-hmm. In the multiverse, doesn't mean there actually isn't one. And this is going to be tying into WandaVision.
Mm-hmm.
So they say the events of WandaVision on Disney Plus will lead directly into the sequel. Mm. And that's like the first like tie-in they'll have between the MCU and Disney Plus, then back into the MCU. In the way that they haven't really done before. It's like Agent Steel just had like small cameos and nothing that really affected anything.
Yeah.
But yeah, they got Benedict Cumberbatch and Elizabeth Olsen, so Scarlet Witch is going to be in this as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, same director and writer from the first movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they seems like they're very much going to make this a little bit more of a scary movie.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
The director said he wanted to give it a gothic horror tone.
Mm-hmm.
Had dreams of making the first scary MCU film.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, there is some scary shit in the Marvel Universe, so you can totally do it.
Yeah.
And especially when you get involved a guy like Doctor Strange who mm-hmm. is able to tap into some crazy powers.
Yeah, makes sense.
Yeah, no kidding. But let's see. We've also got another Disney Plus show, What If, which is basically if What If is sort of like a series that Marvel has done off and on where it's like alternate universe style of what would happen if this happened. Like,
yep. For example, like, here's a way that we could do ones. Other stories that we probably not going to be able to do.
Yeah, like, for example, what if the X-Men in the giant, you know, in the all-new giant X-Men that premiered in that particular team, what if they went off and then died on their first mission?
Yeah.
Or what if a Beast's mutation kept going and it didn't just stop at his looks?
Yeah.
Yeah. They basically put up a huge image of, like, here's a bunch of the actors that are going to be in this. And it's, like, many of the big-name ones. Mm. Like Sam Jackson, Chris Hemsworth, Jeff Goldblum.
Mm-hmm.
Paul Rudd, Jeremy Renner, Kirsten Gillen.
Mm-hmm.
Michael Douglas, like all these different characters, actors and their characters will probably be in this
in
some form or another.
Yeah. Yep. But yeah, so we've also got Hawkeye. That's another Disney Plus show.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's, I guess, going to be taking place after Endgame, where he is kind of, as they teased in it, Kate Bishop's going to be in here.
Mm.
So he's kind of training the next Hawkeye.
Okay.
And sort of going on adventures with her.
Hmm. Yep.
Looks pretty good.
Oh, yeah. It does look pretty good.
Yeah. They definitely had a nice little lock on Jeremy Renner, like, made sure he couldn't tell anything.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
He wasn't going to spoil anything because he's one of the biggest spoilers of the group they have.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then we got Thor, Love and Thunder. That comes out November 5th, 2021. This is going to be the next Thor movie.
Yeah. Yep. Taika Waititi. We just talked about this, I think, last week.
Yep, he's coming
Chris
back.
Hemsworth, Tessa Thompson, going to be doing their things.
Mm-hmm.
But also joined by Natalie Portman, reprising her role. And she'll be the Mighty Thor, the first female Thor.
In the film.
Yeah.
There's already been a female
Thor. I mean, like, she's reprising that
for a while.
Yeah.
She's going to be bringing that into existence, which people immediately started doubting that she could be Thor.
Mm. Yeah.
And it's like, just shut the fuck up. But yeah, that was a nice bit where they're talking about it because Chris Hemsworth's like, yeah, Thor's just kind of into Netflix and 7-Eleven right now. Tessa Thompson, who is, as of Endgame, is the new king of Midgar.
Mm-hmm.
Midgard said she's looking for a queen now.
Mm-hmm.
Basically confirming that she is LGBT.
Yeah.
Yep.
At least lesbian.
Which, let's be honest, that wasn't exactly, they weren't exactly giving any non-hints.
Yeah.
Yeah. I want to say Tessa is bi.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's not really a surprise that they would
do
at least
that.
Put a little bit of that in her character.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we go from there. And then finally, we also got some teases for some future projects, which includes Blade. Yes, they are bringing Blade back. And no, Wesley Snipes is not going to be playing him.
Thank God.
No, they got Mahershala Ali. Actually, is a pretty good fit for that role.
Yes.
Yep.
And he's a really good actor as well.
Yeah.
And we also got a new Fantastic Four, which is actually going to be integrated into the Marvel Universe. Thank God.
Hopefully this one won't suck like all the other ones have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which
is a shame that this took this long to get to Fantastic Four for obvious reasons.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because like the whole thing in like the end, the Marvel Universe is like him and Tony Stark and like a couple others, like the smartest people that exist.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like they constantly are battling each other.
Yeah.
To prove who's the smartest dude.
And now they
come up with the most ridiculous shit. Now
they can't.
Yeah.
Tony Stark isn't around.
Yeah.
And of course, we got a bunch of sequels. We got Black Panther 2. That's obviously going to be a massive hit.
Yeah.
Captain Marvel 2, also.
Yeah.
We're having the third Guardians of the Galaxy movie.
Yep.
And finally, we get a proper X-Men movie for the MCU.
Yay.
Yep.
It'll just take some time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that stuff is all very, very early stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But looking at this list, I'm like, you know what? Maybe Disney Plus isn't such a bad deal after all.
Nope.
So.
Seems like the only issue is a lot of the stuff you expect there to be day one or not.
Yeah.
Like you're not going to have all of the MCU stuff in there, not all the backlog Disney stuff.
Yeah.
They're going to have a lot of it, but
yeah,
depending on like what you specifically want to see right away, it might be
I wanna see,
good to wait.
I want to see Falcon and Winter Soldier, so
that'd
be worth it.
You're gonna be waiting
for that. So.
Yeah.
Okay. Well then, I do believe we got ourselves a show, folks.
Yep.
Hot damn! It was a one chock full of stuff too. So. Yeah. With that, I would like to remind all of our listeners, if you've got a question, comment, or just something you want us to read on the air, you can get in contact with us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. It's letsweekenders@gmail.com. We got a link for you in the show notes. Also, on top of Apple Podcasts, you can catch our little bit of unscripted shenanigans at TuneIn, Google Play, RSS, archive.org. Pretty much any kind of podcast aggregator or things where you can download and hear my sweet, silky voice. So, with that, I have been your host with the most, Brandon Perkins, and for Filippo D'Onofrio, Patrick Mifflin, and Chris Eloci, good night, and I'm going right back to Fire Emblem.
Nice.